Good morning, 7:39 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and got a chance today to talk to Mike Wood. He is the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Joins us typically at this time on a Thursday. Hey, Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. So we've got a couple of interesting things that have happened in the city. One is, didn't happen recently, but back in 2016, there was a murder of Millicent Ann Burnett McManus. It's kind of a cold case now, and almost a decade old. But you guys have kind of reopened this case or are examining it again, because murders never stop being things that you guys care about.
Yeah, there's two parts to this. The first one obviously is the cold case of the murder of this young lady. And it's, we've talked about it before on these cold cases. We will never, ever give them up. A lot of times if we run into a brick wall, we will take that case from one investigator and give it to another for a fresh set of eyes and perspective. But the other part of this is the fact that we now have a former state attorney, John Mulchan, on with us. He works for the Pensacola Police Department now, and his one of his jobs, he actually does two, but the main one is to investigate these cold cases. Hmm. So we're very, very fortunate to have John.
I feel quite ignorant. I didn't realize John had left the SAO's office and come to work for you guys full time.
Yeah, if you talk to him, he'll tell you that he got rid of all his suits and ties, and now he wears a PPD polo, and he's digging into these cold cases.
And if I know John, he's just happy to get more range time.
Yeah, and that's the other job that he has. He was out on the range with us while we were transitioning to new weapons. He's one of the range officers, and he's very, very proficient with a firearm.
Yeah, no, for sure. We're going to come back to that in just a second, but I want to get to the other things first. You also had a vehicular homicide, and you've made an arrest in that case. Where did this accident take place?
It was on 9th Avenue about Keating, and it occurred when a woman was, from what witnesses say, it was a road rage type situation. She was driving very aggressively. She attempted to pass a vehicle that was in the left lane going northbound. So she got into the passing lane, but there was a car sitting there trying to make a left turn. So she made another left, which put her in the oncoming lane, where she hit a vehicle head on. One of the people in that vehicle did not make it, and the other two were very seriously hurt. And another part of this, she was charged with child endangerment because she had her 11-year-old in the front seat of the car when she drove in this manner.
Oh, my God. The aggressive, reckless, once you make one stupid decision, other stupid decisions cascade from it. But, yeah, that intersection, I know that, you know, right by the Walmart just to the north on 9th Avenue, right before you get to the overpass of I-10. Man, ugh. Okay, so you've made an arrest in that case. All right, very good. You also had a drug-related arrest, 38-year-old Anna Colley, a trafficking arrest. Is that right?
Yeah, this was this took months to look into. This trafficking was happening out of a home in the Inverness subdivision, and when officers served a search warrant there was an incredible amount of narcotics that were taken, different ones from just you name it. It was pretty much on the list. It's extensive.
Just because people may not have seen it, the numbers that I saw were 170 grams of fentanyl, 160 grams of methamphetamine. That's a lot of drugs.
Yeah, I'm glad you got that with you. I don't have that list with me. I appreciate the backup on that.
You bet.
It is an extensive list.
And so you guys made go ahead.
Yeah, we want people to know this type of thing can happen anywhere. And if you've got some suspicious activity going on at a neighbor's house that's just something seems off, please give us a call. And we can't just rush right over there and kick the door down and go get the drugs out of the house. That's not going to happen. But these type of investigations can take months. But sooner or later, like this case, sooner or later, hopefully we'll get in there and get that taken care of and get that element out of there, because nobody wants that sort of thing happening in their neighborhood.
The other thing, and we kind of hinted at it a moment ago, is that the Pensacola Police Department, after quite a long time using one platform, which was previously you guys were using the Glock 22, which is a 40 caliber. It's a slightly larger bullet for people who aren't all that gun proficient. It's just a little bit larger bullet, a little more stopping power historically is the argument for the 40 caliber. You're moving to a 9mm, but you're not going to the Glock 17, which has been kind of the long standard firearm that people use, you know, that even the Sheriff's Department, I think, uses. But you're going to the Glock 45, which is a slightly more of a like a hybrid, a little bit more modernized version of the Glock. People can get confused. It's not a 45 caliber. It's still a 9mm caliber, but it is called a Glock 45. Is that right?
Yes, the model. It's the model 45,
right,
which is a 9mm.
And the main impetus for that is what? Cost, accuracy, jamming, hand size, all of the above?
All the above. It's a little bit lighter. The ammunition is cheaper. And the technology, the red dot technology that we have on these weapons, and I can tell you that I was out at the range transitioning last weekend, and some folks that have problems firing their weapons, when they got used to this one, those problems went away. This weapon is very accurate, and I want to talk about the red dot for a moment. It's just it's not a laser sight. It's not a dot that you will see on a target. The officer will look through a viewfinder, for the lack of a better term, and see this red dot on the target, and then the round will go wherever that red dot is. They're zeroed into a specific range. So that technology is on these weapons.
Yeah, it's a very common misperception is people have the idea that the red dot sight is a laser sight because they've seen the Terminator and you pull the trigger halfway and it shows a laser pointed at somebody's chest or thousands of sniper movies or whatever. And it's not that. And the best way I've always found to kind of explain to somebody is imagine that the top of your gun had a very, very small tube, like a toilet paper roll tube, but even smaller than that. And there at the very end of that tube is a light that comes back towards your eyes that only you can see. So you don't even see that light until you're relatively on target pointing the gun in the right place. But once you do, wherever that dot is where the bullet's going to go. And it's very easy as opposed to this,
yeah,
the standard old iron sights where you try and align the little pin with the U or the whatever your version on your car, on your gun is. Mike, now I'll tell you as a gun owner and user myself, I don't like the red dot. My son loves his red dot sights. He loves them. And I know everybody, I'm the only one I know, but I'm just so familiar with the iron sights that retraining to the red dot when, you know, Drew Kilgan was taking me through that a long time ago on the range, I'm like, ah, it's just awkward. But you're saying that people who have had trouble with accuracy with their iron sights on the old Glock 22s, the 45s with the red dots are like, bing, 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 everything's working out better groupings. I mean, you're seeing results from people?
Yeah, not up right off the bat. Once they got used to it, and keep in mind, we were on the range for a day and a half. We were out there in daylight situations, and then we went back very early the next morning while it was dark, and we were getting used to that sight in the dark. And as the sun was rising too, so we got to use it in all kinds of situations that we may use in real life. But once the thing about the red dot is, and versus the iron sights in darkness or low light situations, you have something to look at. You know when your weapon is trained very close and not too high and not too low. If you can see that red dot, You're very close to that target just by doing that.
Okay, yeah, and I mean that makes sense because you're operating in a bunch of different lighting situations, so I can understand that as well. I more think that the 9mm conversion is the one that makes sense. I'm kind of surprised it's been this long because that's become like the industry standard. One other question, and I only ask this because I know the Sheriff's Department made the move where they went from Glock to the SIGs. They went to the SIG P320s, and I had a chance to use that at the range. And you know, it's not the gun I would have picked, but having used them, like, oh man, I see the value of this gun, and it's modular and it's adaptable to everybody's hand size and all this kind of stuff. Did the department consider going to the SIGs, or did you just not really and just stick with the Glock, model line?
I don't have any information on that. A lot of times with police departments, it's personal preference on the department.
Sure.
The Glocks that we had in the past worked very well for us. As far as having jams and things like that, they were getting old. Parts were getting old,
yeah.
And it was time. These weapons were between 20 and 25 years old, and that's old. So it was time. It was time to move on. And we've had very good luck in the past with the Glock.
What, and absolutely, I mean, you can't argue with the durability. I think SIG had a bad reputation originally, deserved bad reputation, but they've gotten a lot better. Last question on this subject, only because somebody texted me the question. What are you guys doing with the old pistols? I guess if the officer wants to buy it, they can. But what about the people who don't want to buy them? Are you going to auction them, sell them, melt them? I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, they're going to go back to a dealer. We'll take those, and we will sell those back. But the officers also have the opportunity to buy that weapon back and keep it for personal use. And a lot of officers are doing that.
Okay, very good. I just know the first gun I ever bought was a Glock 17 during the ban era, and I got it because it was an officer's gun, and that's what allowed it to be a high capacity back when that was a thing. And I always forget about it, but then I remember, like, I'm carrying around a cop's gun, you know, once upon a time, a long time ago. So, you know, cop guns are good guns. All right. You always like to end with some kind of a cop myth or a did you know. Do we have one for this week?
Yeah, and this is kind of on the subject matter of the weapons. This is an older but widely cited study in the International Journal of Police Science and Management. It indicated that approximately 90% of all police shootings happen in low-light conditions, which is in the daytime or can happen in the daytime or night. But the incidents that took place during daylight hours were more likely to result in the individual being hit. So, in other words, it's kind of an obvious thing. We had more shootings in dark situations, but more accuracy in the daytime. So, hopefully, the technology that these new weapons have is going to help out, and no matter what. And I do want to say, while we went through this, training, we were our sites, those red dots, were taped up in case something ever happened to them, if they got dirty, muddy, or whatever. And we were also going back to the old school way of using that iron sight and other methods to make sure that we were as accurate as we could be.
Yeah, just in case training. But it makes sense. Like, if it's darkish, you can't really see the iron sights so well or what you're aiming at. That's a challenge. It's also a good reminder that, you know, and I know you guys do this, that you got to train in the circumstances you're going to encounter and when are most of the gunfights going to take place. And most cops never get in one, but, you know, if you got to be prepared for it. Train in the low light, you know, shoot in the dark, basically, because that's the situation you're probably going to find yourself in. That's a great training reminder as well. Mike Wood, I will ask this because I know somebody's. If somebody wanted to buy one of those guns for whatever reason, is there a way for them to do that, or are you guys going to put out that information?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's a question that we would have to answer through our training division. But
okay.
Yeah, that's a question I don't know.
Okay, I know I'm getting texts about this exact thing, and I just want to head off the question before it gets asked. So very
good.
I can follow
up on that and get back with you. But,
okay.
But I don't want to guess.
Okay, sure. I always appreciate that. Mike Wood, he is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. As always, Mike, thank you for the time. I always appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.